Well, I was spending some time reading about obedience. And that was generated by what I was going to talk about this morning when I talked about bearing fruit for God. So one of the things that I read as I was preparing for that discussion was some work by Nicholson Whiteside in Sound Doctrine. It's a little five-volume set. I don't know if you've ever looked at that five-volume set, little red books. They're very basic, but very helpful, very well done. So I spent some time reading about what they had to say about the idea of obedience. I'd like to talk about that as a basic principle of our faith. And they suggest that there are two places that we ought to look if we're trying to understand obedience. The first is 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter and verse 22. To set the stage for 1 Samuel 15, Saul, trying to differentiate between Saul and Paul right there. Saul, king of Israel, has been told to go and kill all of the Amalekites, completely wipe them out. And we're familiar with the story. He doesn't do that. And on his way back home, he has the misfortune, perhaps, of running into Samuel. Samuel is the prophet of God. Samuel is the one who has anointed him. And I think Saul has some very fond feelings for Samuel, but Samuel is going to confront him. So, someone want to read 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter, and at verse 22, and this is what Samuel says to Saul when it becomes apparent that he has not killed all of the Amalekites as God had told him. So, 1 Samuel 15, verse 22.
Samuel said, "Has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hear, heed then the fat of rams."
Okay. And that probably is a reflection of the fact that Saul has said, well, hey, I kept the best part of what we found among the Amalekites because I wanted to make a sacrifice to God. And Samuel corrects him. Sacrifice is not as important as obeying. Comments, thoughts about what's happening there. Any thoughts from people at home? Okay, so let's look at Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter. And Ecclesiastes 12 is kind of where the wise man begins to summarize everything that he's said in the book of Ecclesiastes. So we'll look at Ecclesiastes 12 as he begins to kind of summarize everything. And can I get someone to read Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14?
Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil.
Okay. Comment. What do you see there?
Kind of a warning to be ready.
Okay.
For the judgment's coming, I guess. That's
Judgment is coming. That's undeniable.
Judgment's going to take a really long time because he's taking every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil, for everybody. It's going to be a long time. It's going to take a long time.
Okay.
That's my thought.
That's interesting. I've thought about that sometimes and wondered how long we're going to be standing there waiting for our turn on the judgment seat. In my case, whoever is following me is going to wait for a while. Okay. Yeah, Ted.
I thought about this a lot. And what does time mean when you're dead?
Oh, that's true.
I mean, when you think about it, it may be judgment the second you die. Because once you're dead, you're no longer in the timeline. Time doesn't matter to God. Time doesn't mean anything to God. And once you're a spirit, what does time mean? So that's I don't know how to look at it any differently than that. And that is that when you die, what's going to happen? Where do you go? What does the Bible tell us about where you go when you die? Well, most of what we read about and what Jesus talked about with his apostles was it's pretty instantaneous. You're going to be somewhere. So once you die, I think there's judgment.
Yeah, good point. Go ahead.
I have this question in my mind, and other people probably think I'm silly, but it says God forgets your sin. He forgives and he forgets. So then he brings it up in judgment?
No. That's my impression. That was a really short answer to a very good question. If he brings it up, he says, but I'm not going to hold you accountable because Jesus took that away from you. So, yeah, I don't know whether God knows about it, is willing to bring it up and say, but Jesus took care of it.
Well, I'm not testing God, but
yeah.
Well, I think if your name is in the book of life, that's your judgment. You are in Jesus' hand, and he has forgotten your sins, and you have been adopted. But back to how long it's going to take.
It's going to
take. If during the day of Pentecost, the apostles were speaking, and each man heard in their own language, God could talk. If he knows every hair on everybody's head, God could talk to everybody all at the same time. It doesn't have to be something that would take centuries because there are billions of people.
That's an interesting idea.
I don't know.
Trust me, my point wasn't how long is it going to take for God to catalog all of my sins. My point is, and I think that Whiteside and Nichols make the point that we answer to God for what we do. And God will hold us accountable for the things that we do. When Jesus says to the apostles, one day judgment is coming and all the hidden thoughts are revealed, they're put right out there. Nothing that we do is kept from public display. You know, that means a lot in terms of obedience. Okay, this is a definition for obedience. Now, this comes from Webster. When I looked at Thayer and Mounts and all of the other sources that I could look at for obedience and the way that it's used biblically, seems like it corresponds to what Webster has to say about obedience. And this is interesting, or at least I found it very interesting. Obedience is compliance with command, prohibition, and known law and rule of any duty that is prescribed. So obedience is complying with a command or a prohibition. The performance of what is required or enjoined by authority. And remember, When I've talked about morality, I've talked about understanding that God determines what's right and what's wrong in every case. Now, it may be something that I agree with, maybe something that I disagree with, but ultimately, God describes what's right and wrong. And if God says it's right, it's right. So, just remember, it's the performance of what's enjoined or required by the one who is in the position of authority. It is abstaining from what is prohibited in compliance with the command or the prohibition. All of that makes sense. I think we understand all of that. Now, this is the part that I find particularly interesting. To constitute obedience, the act or forbearance to act must be in submission to authority. The command must be known to the person, and his or her compliance must be in consequence of it, in consequence of the commandment, or it's not obedience. Raises a question, doesn't it? If God didn't command me to do something and I do it, is it obedience? Now, according to Webster and pretty generally the use throughout the biblical sources, if God didn't command it, there is no obedience. Yeah.
That's the same thing as saying, without law, there is no sin.
Okay. Good point. Where there is no law, there is no sin. That's the point that Paul makes in the book of Romans. Yeah, Carol.
Well, if you go back to your first one where you're talking about King Saul, not doing what God said, but doing what he said, because he was in authority, you understand.
And well, he thought he was.
Because he was justifying what he was doing, not doing what God asked him to do. That fits in really well with the obedience. And then on this other one, it seems to me that the, I don't know how to put it, so I guess I'll be quiet.
That's a good point. Good point. Other comments? Yeah, Bill?
There's a possibility, and it's only conjecture, that when Saul saved all these things for sacrifice, that he was rationalizing that they were going to be destroyed that way.
Yeah, probably not.
I think he got caught with his hand in the cookie till.
I think that's what Samuel says. You got caught with your hand in the cookie jar.
He didn't think Sammy was going to hear what he thought he was going to hear.
Yeah, well.
You just say, oh, he's not going to hear that.
Yeah.
He just brought it back.
Yeah. So, Nicholas Whiteside made the point that obedience has to be in response to authority statement. Yeah, Manny.
And it has to be in response to authority, but it also has to be based upon submission to that authority.
Yeah.
Expand that a little.
Okay. For example, take this out of the context of God's authority. Look at the context of a parent, okay, making a rule for my child. Okay, we're at the park, we're playing, my child has a rule. My child, in submission to my authority, must follow that rule. Another child, not in submission to my authority, does not have to follow that rule.
Okay.
Okay. So if we look at the idea that for us to demonstrate and show obedience and the expectation of obedience to God, we must accept the authority and be in submission to that authority.
Okay. Okay. Excellent point. Yeah.
And thinking that the other part I was thinking about was if you have a parent that isn't always constant about their rules, that doesn't pay attention but makes the rules anyway, that's when God says, whatever you do that was good or what was bad, I know what you're doing. So he's watching. If you have somebody who puts all these rules down, a boss, and then he goes away, the mouse rules the house sort of thing, and then you say, well, nobody's coming back. God says, oh, yes, I know what you're doing, good or bad, and I am here, and you should obey.
So ultimately, the authority that we respond to is God. Yes. Now, Mandy makes a good point in an intermediate sense, we respond to the authority of our parents. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Bill?
Those who don't accept or recognize God's authority are not going to get away with being ignorant of the law.
Correct.
Okay. So the fact that I choose to say that I'm not responding to God, that I am not under God's authority, doesn't relieve me of the responsibility to obey.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Lenny. Yeah.
Biblical obedience relies on our faith put into action by obeying God's commandments, doing his will, and living a life that is bringing him glory.
Okay. Frank?
Dean?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that from the beginning, before God wrote
Go ahead. Say that again.
Right from wrong. And so if from the beginning, people knew the difference between right and wrong before God wrote specific commandments. We have specific commandments we're to follow now. But beyond that, I think that we all know what's right and wrong just from our nature.
Yeah, you make a good point that nowhere in the biblical information is there a prohibition against Cain killing Abel until later when it says, thou shalt not kill. But Cain killed Abel. He knew it was wrong. God had somehow revealed that to him. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah.
Was your question, if you did something that God did not tell you to do, are you obeying God? Was that your question a few minutes ago?
Well, that's the question that ultimately I got to.
Okay, can you give me an example so I can wrap my head around this?
God did not, let's see. For instance, God did not say that I should attempt to heal a leper. In fact, God says, put the leper out of the camp. So if I say, I want to try to heal this leper, I'll ultimately put him out of the camp if I can't heal him. But first I want to try to heal this leper. That's not obeying God. I'm not saying it's disobeying God at that point, but it's not in obedience to God. Okay? And I think most of us would look at that situation and say, you know, that's a good thing. But it's just not obedience. Okay? That the kind of example you were looking for?
I was looking for a today example.
That's a today example. I mean, leprosy is now something, a disease we can treat, but it's still contagious. And the treatment is not always 100% successful. The best way to avoid leprosy is to avoid contact. Now, a doctor could try and treat that leper with an antibiotic regimen that is used for treatment, but it may not cure the leper. And it's usually a 9 month to 12 month cure process. You're on those antibiotics for 9 to 12 months. So during that time, that leper can still spread the disease. So God's commandment to put them out of the camp was to prevent transmission. And now this doctor may be able to heal the leper, maybe
okay,
cure it. But that doesn't mean that other people aren't going to get leprosy from this leper.
It's interesting. Hang on to that thought. Okay? Hang on to that thought. Yeah, Carol.
I just want to go to the quote where it says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. All of this obedience is done because you love God. And that the world does not always see.
It's okay, hang on to that thought too. We're going to get there.
Okay.
Other comments? Okay. Now, Nicola Whiteside also make this point that obedience has to be viewed in terms of testing. And I've heard this explained in a number of different ways, but the essence of obedience is willing submission to authority. Men may do some things that are commanded by God without obeying God. Men may do some things that God commands people to do, and it still not be obedience. Sometimes I do the things that God wants me to do because it makes sense to me. That's not obedience. And the illustration that I've always used is, God said, when you marry a woman, you marry her for life. Do not put her away. Now, there are a lot of people in this world who choose not to divorce their wife. They don't care that God said don't do it. They don't do it because they don't want to divide their stuff. That's not obedience. Robert Kennedy did not divorce his wife. She did not divorce him because he wanted to be president. And nobody who was divorced could become president. Now, that's not in the Constitution. It doesn't say that. But that was the general thinking. If you divorce your wife, you're not going to be president. He wanted to be president, so he didn't divorce his wife. It had nothing to do with God. It was not obedience. Yeah, Dean.
Well, I think a simpler example is the world is full of people that profess Christ. And they worship God in a bunch of different ways. There are people out there that I'm associated with that don't worship God at all, that are really good people. They're choosing to be really good people. But you're not in obedience to God, no matter how you serve him, if you haven't been baptized. Baptism's required. Without baptism, you're not in obedience. So it's the knowing and doing, not just the doing. I think that the majority of people in the world today are inherently kind. But they're not kind because they're being in obedience to God, who tells us to be kind and humble and
They're that way because that's how mom and dad raised them and how grandma and grandpa raised them, or because they're from the South where, you know, whatever. It's just kind of clarifying it. Obedience is following God's law.
Right. Good illustration. Good illustration. And people in the South are not necessarily kind. Bless your heart. Somebody else had a copy of Bill.
What you were saying about doing things because they weren't necessarily obedience to God. You and I and everybody here has a conscience that's educated by our faith. And we do things according to our conscience. So we are obeying God. We do good.
Okay. Again, hang on to that thought. Okay. I like the thought. But I also like the thought that if God said to do it and you happen to agree with it, and that's why you do it, because you agree it's a good idea, it's not obeying God.
Because what he wants is our heart.
Okay. Hang on to that. That's a good point. A reason that we can see for complying doesn't void compliance. Okay? God said, don't lie. Now, I have experience in the world. I told a lot of lies, and I always got in trouble when I told a lie because my mother would ask me a question about where I'd been, and she already knew the answer. And I wasn't smart enough to figure out that she already knew the answer. So eventually I learned, hey, this is going to work out better for you if you just go ahead and tell the truth. The fact that I could see that doesn't mean that when I tell the truth, I'm necessarily not obeying God. Could be that I'm doing it because I want to obey God, and I can see a reason for doing it. Now, we think about baptism a lot, and people say, well, baptism is one of those commandments that's a test because there's no earthly reason why you ought to be baptized. You just do it because God said to do it. Well, maybe. I can look at that and see that it really shows a cleansing. And so I might do it for that reason. And to obey God. Now, if I couldn't see the reason for it, and I did it anyway, that's clearly obedience. God gave the Israelites certain food restrictions. Don't eat unclean animals. I'm not going to tell you I know why. But I can say that that makes a lot of sense because those unclean animals are hard to cook. And to so cook that you avoid diseases that those animals may have. God said when Israel camped, he gave them instructions. You put the latrines so far away from the camp. I look at that and say, from a public health standpoint, you got to put the latrines downstream from where you're getting your water. Okay? The fact that I can see the reason doesn't mean that I'm not obeying. But obedience can be a test. Especially when I really can't see the reason why God said this. And that takes me back to Naaman the leper. Remember what he said when he was told to cure his leprosy by going and dipping in the River Jordan?
They got clean ones at home.
There are other rivers that are a lot cleaner than Jordan. I can do it there. I will dip, and I'll dip seven times. But I can't see the reason behind saying it has to be the River Jordan, so I'll do it in Arbana or Parfar. Those were two rivers that were much cleaner, and he was familiar with them. Reason for compliance does not void obedience, but the fact that you can't see the reason behind the compliance may mean that the compliance is a test. That the obedience is a test. And I think I can say with assurance that obedience demands that the moving cause, the thing that makes you do what you do, is reverence for God. Okay? Now, we do learn obedience, don't we? Jesus learned obedience, son though he was, through the things that he suffered. That's Hebrews, the fifth chapter. The human will must be trained. Neglected training of the will is being manifested today. People didn't train their wills in obedience. And because of that, they do what they think is good. And we see that. Somebody want to read 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 through 5. And then we'll get somebody else to read Romans 6 at verse 16.
For though we walk in the flesh, we are not warring, we do not war according to the flesh. For the flesh, the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powered for the destruction of the fortress. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ.
Okay. Every thought captive. That's the point that I want you to see. Romans 6, at verse 16.
Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness?
Okay. The whole question is, who do we yield ourselves to? The whole question of obedience is not describing behavior. The whole question of obedience revolves around, who do you want to obey? And sometimes I can want to obey myself and do the same things that people that obey God do. So we learn obedience. And I would argue that the problem is that we have not learn to train our will to serve God. Our will, untrained, is what we respond to. Now, understand, God seeks man's good. God's rules grow out of man's needs. That Jeremiah 10 at verse 23, it's not within man to direct his own steps. We don't know how to live. And I read someone who was talking about respecting God in the midst of the horrible flooding that happened in Texas, and all of those little girls that were at a camp that were swept away in the floodwaters. God does what God does for my good. Sometimes I can see how it's for my good. Sometimes I can't. But I can know this. God always does what he does for my good. I can't say that about government. I can't say that about my parents. I can't say that about my friends. But I can say that about God. God always does what he wants, or God always makes rules for man's good. So command, yeah, go ahead, Gerald.
Well, it's just that I don't blame God for a flood. I don't say that God's acting this way and that he took these children away. That's for me a human point. How could God do this to me? How could God do that to those little children? I never believe in a God that would do that kind of destruction. God put nature into action, and nature has consequences, but God will always, as you say, do good and find good and do the best for the parents of those children. But I don't feel that he tests us unless the test is in the Old Testament. He says he's testing somebody. I think life tests people, and God is there to help us through.
Yeah. Good point.
2 points.
But I think, you know, my ultimate solution to a flood is that God never does anything that isn't intended for my good. I may not be able to see it, but I know that God's commandments are manifestations of his grace. They're not the antithesis of grace. God's commandments, God giving us rules, is God manifesting his grace, because I wouldn't know how to live. We're about out of time. Let me give you just one thing to consider. At what point in my journey to becoming more and more like God, does obedience stem from wanting to do God's will, or is obedience because it's what I want to do, but what I want to do is informed by God? Now, somebody made the comment about, we follow our conscience, but our conscience is trained. That makes a lot of sense to me. Nickel and Whiteside don't include this idea. This is something that I'm putting in there. This is Dean. It's bearing fruit. As I surrender myself to God, My dad always used to pray, God, give me the desire to do your will. And I think that's what obedience is. When it's what I really want to do, because I always want to do what God wants me to do. Am I following God? Yes, I think so. Yeah, Bill. You got the last comment. Better be a good one.
That's a question up there. We will never be perfect as long as we live in this body. I think there's always going to be a point where those things both exist in our lives.
Okay. Good point. Last point. With that, we'll bring this to a conclusion. takes it out of leading us in the song. It's an opportunity for us to reflect on obeying God and wanting to obey God.